KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A new federal effort aims to end homelessness among people released from prisons. As the Mountain West News Bureau's Hannah Merzbach reports, communities in Wyoming and Idaho and a tribe in Montana are part of the initiative.
One team is in Wyoming's Natrona County. It's the top destination for parolees in the state since there's a lot of reentry services there, but it's still hard to get long-term housing.
We've definitely seen an influx of individuals who come here for assistance and who don't qualify for as much as they think.
But Natrona's Christy Oster, who's leading the project under the U.S. Bureau of Justice Assistance, says people released from prisons could soon get permanent housing and other help like career services. So far, there's no funding involved, but Oster says monthly meetings with federal experts keep them on track to eventually build the housing.
Is it data that's next? Is it partnerships that is next? Is it getting the city together to determine if there's land available?
Idaho's Department of Corrections and the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes in Montana are also working on similar initiatives. I'm Hannah Merzbach.
Police are investigating a fire that burned the Student Union building on Dene College in Salie, Arizona, destroying records dating back to the 1950s and gowns for this year's graduation. Navajo police say the fire was reported around 2:30 a.m. Monday. The campus closed to the public while essential services like food and housing were relocated for students. Remote learning was being planned for Tuesday. No injuries were reported. The fire is under investigation. Willie Hensley is a well-known Alaska Native leader, but a documentary that premiered this week in Anchorage gives you a chance to get to know what makes him tick. KNBA's Rhonda McBride has this preview.
Willie Hensley has worn a lot of hats in his life, and you can see a lot of them in Marla Williams' film, as well as something else.
That was really fun in this film, to look at how many different hairstyles Willie has had throughout his life. He's gone from a flat top and a nerdy little side part to long 60s sideburns, and now to a ponytail all the way down his back.
The film gives you a taste of Hensley's personal charm and traditional Inupiaq humor as it follows his rise as a champion for the Native land rights movement and transformation into a statewide leader.
I think he's a man of his times. He's always current. He's always looking forward, but he's not stuck in his past. He uses his past to keep him moving forward.
The film also takes you to a religious boarding school in Tennessee, where Hensley arrived as a teenager with only a shopping bag full of belongings. His classmates didn't quite know what to make of the care packages of whale meat and other subsistence foods he received, but were happy to have him on their football team because he was one of the fastest on the field.
In those days, if you were a young Inupiaq that age, if you survived TB and chickenpox and influenza and everything else that everybody caught, we were pretty damn tough.
The documentary's next showing will be in Hensley's hometown of Kotzebue on April 17th and can later be seen online. It is the 10th installment of the Magnetic North, the Alaska Character series, which has profiled political figures like Governor Bill Sheffield and Native leaders like Jacob Adams and carver Nathan Jackson. The series was made possible by the Alaska Humanities Forum and the Rasmussen Foundation. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Enbridge strives to be a good steward of the environment, a safe operator of essential energy infrastructure, and a good neighbor. More on Enbridge's Indigenous Reconciliation Action Plan at Enbridge.com. Enbridge proudly supports this program.
Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs Strauss Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for over 40 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That basically means that starting this day, you're unlawfully present in the country.
A University of Alaska grad is among international students the Trump administration is forcing out of the country. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, April 15th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, Senator Lisa Murkowski worries about the impact of tariffs on Alaska.
What I'm hearing from just the average Alaskan in the airport is what is it going to mean to me just for the price of consumer goods?
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com.
If you would like to play an integral part in what you're listening to, public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. If you are already a member or corporate sponsor, thank you. If you'd like to learn more about how to become a member or sponsor, it's easy. Start with a call to your public radio station.
Senator Lisa Murkowski says she's worried new U.S. tariffs will damage some of Alaska's biggest industries, especially commercial fishing.
We send a lot of product to China. And we get a lot of it back from China. So this is something I think that's going to be very significant to us.
President Trump this month announced a new 125% import tax on many Chinese goods, and China has a tariff almost as large on imports from the United States. While seafood was top of mind for Murkowski when reporters in Anchorage asked her about tariffs Monday, she said she's also heard concern from the mining industry on the cost of imported machinery and equipment. She says the worries extend beyond the resource sector.
What I'm hearing from just the average Alaskan in the airport is what is it going to mean to me just for the price of consumer goods, and everything from a new car to being able to remodel my house to what I'm paying for groceries.
Murkowski is nearly alone among Republican senators in her outspoken criticism of the Trump administration on a host of policies. Senator Dan Sullivan declined an interview request. Spokeswoman Amanda Coyne said by email that Sullivan believes in open markets, but also believes that China cheats at international trade. If Alaska fishermen are harmed by the tariffs, Coyne says Sullivan will try to get them whatever relief may become available for farmers. Likewise, Congressman Nick Begich declined an interview request and sent an email. Begich says tariffs are needed to restore American manufacturing. International students in Alaska on education visas are among those nationwide facing removal as the Trump administration's immigration crackdown continues. More than 800 students or recent graduates across the country have either seen their visas revoked or their international education records erased. That includes at least four in Alaska. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early spoke to one man in Wasilla who suddenly finds himself caught in the country unlawfully.
Jean Kashikov first visited Alaska in 2017 as a tourist from his home country of Kazakhstan.
We took a cruise out of Whittier and we did a bunch of regular tourist stuff, and I felt like it's a really nice place with really nice people.
Kashikov decided to apply to the University of Alaska Anchorage and began taking courses in 2019. He graduated last May with a bachelor's degree in math, followed by an associate's degree in aviation in December. Now 24 years old, he began working as a self-employed flight instructor in Wasilla in March.
In the last 4 to 5 weeks that I've been doing this, I had a bunch of one-time customers where I gave them, you know, biennial flight reviews, which is something that every pilot needs every 2 years, no matter how small.
Kashikov is able to work in the U.S. under an optional practical training period. It allows international students to remain in the country for 1 year after graduating, so long as they're working in the field they studied. The federal government tracks and documents the students' activities with what's called a Student and Exchange Visitor Information System, or SEVIS record. Kashikov's training period wasn't set to end until January of 2026, but last Thursday, as he was eating breakfast at the Denali family restaurant, he received an email from UAA that his CVIS record had been terminated.
That basically means that starting this day, you are unlawfully present in the country.
In a statement, University of Alaska officials say a total of 4 UAA students, including one currently enrolled, received a similar revocation without any prior notice. They added that no students from the Fairbanks or Southeast campuses have been impacted so far. Kashikov says he believes the U.S. isn't following its own procedures and laws. At least one experienced immigration lawyer agrees.
This is like totally illegal. Everybody, they know it's illegal, but they're figuring people aren't going to be able to fight it.
That's Margaret Stock, an Anchorage-based attorney and internationally recognized expert on immigration law. She cited research from the National Association of International Educators, which found that more than 800 international students nationwide saw their visas revoked or their CVIS records terminated in recent weeks.
The president apparently set a goal internally at the White House of deporting 1 million people, and they haven't been able to find enough people who are actually deportable in order to do that.
Stock says instead, the administration is trying to get people to deport themselves by revoking their visas or telling them directly to leave the country. She says there hasn't been a consistent reason given to students for the termination of their visas.
Lately, it's been other, with a vague reference to a criminal records check. So it sounds like they apparently went into some system and found the person had a ticket of some kind, or they got arrested for something, even if no charges were brought against them.
Kashikov admits that he has been arrested before. He says it was 3 years ago in Arizona when he was arrested for blocking a public bus he says refused to pick him up. He had no alcohol or drugs in his system, didn't act violently, and the charges were dropped. He also has a pending speeding ticket in Georgia from August. Stock says neither incident is grounds to deport someone, but many people don't have the resources to take on the federal government in court.
Their strategy is to do things that are illegal because they think people are going to have to go into court and they won't be able to afford a lawyer and they won't be able to fight the government because it costs a lot of money to sue people in federal court.
Kashikov says he's consulted with immigration attorneys who've basically given him 3 options. One is to simply leave the country. Another is to try to get his CVIS record reinstated, though Stock says the Trump administration is not approving reinstatements right now. A third option is to sue the federal government. Kashikov says he'll most likely just leave.
Since I'm unlawfully present since Thursday, you know, without the wording or anything, they can technically come grab me at any time. So I'm not willing to test them. I want to leave if I can't find a better solution, and now there is no better solution on the horizon as of right now.
Kashikov says he's going to miss Alaska, and at least one of his flight instruction clients says they're going to miss him as well. Kenneth Grote lives in Palmer and says he looked for a flight instructor for more than a year to help him get his sport license before he found Kashikov.
He's a good pilot to start out with, but a good instructor as well. You know, he did maneuvers that I hadn't done in a while, and it just worked out good having a good guy in the cockpit with me.
Grote says Kashikov leaving throws a wrench in his own plans, but it also means the state will be losing a talented worker.
And it just seems like it's hard to find young people to work these days, and John just seemed, for his age, he seemed super motivated, you know, and headed in the right direction. I really wanted him to succeed.
Though his future in Alaska seems to be coming to a close, Kashikov wants others to learn from his experience.
I want the voting public to know that, you know, 6 months later or a year later or whenever, when they come out on the news and say we deported, removed, etc., so many thousands of violent criminals and whatnot, they're going to claim that that's what they've done. And I just want people to know that that's literally not what's happening.
Kashikov received an official notice from the State Department that his visa was revoked on Monday night. As of Tuesday afternoon, he remained in the country. Officials with the State Department and the Kazakhstan embassy, which told Kashikov his visa was revoked, did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
The North American Aerospace Defense Command, or NORAD, says it monitored and intercepted 6 Russian military aircraft flying through the Alaska Air Defense Identification Zone yesterday. NORAD says the Russian sortie remained in international airspace and was not considered a threat. The Russian aircraft were spotted about 250 nautical miles from Shemya Island in the western Aleutians and flew over the Bering Sea for approximately 2.5 hours. NORAD launched military aircraft from Alaska to respond to the incident, but the defense organization declined to say how many and what kind due to security considerations. It's not the first Russian military activity in the Alaska Air Defense Identification Zone, which stretches out 150 miles from sovereign U.S. territory. In January, NORAD also scrambled U.S. and Canadian fighter jets to intercept a formation of Russian aircraft flying off the coast of northern Alaska. In a release, NORAD said it has many options to defend North America, including a network of satellites and fighter jets, as well as ground-based and airborne radar systems. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, an Anchorage mechanic offers tips for protecting your car from Mount Spurs volcanic ash.
Maybe our best choice is to stay at home, stay inside, and not drive through it.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If domestic violence has touched your life, know that you are not alone. You have the power to break free and build a future filled with love and respect. There's hope and help waiting for you. For free and confidential support, visit notaloneak.org to speak to someone who's trained to help. Every Alaskan deserves to feel safe. This message sponsored by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
Anchorage police are sharing a new photo of someone thought to have poisoned Star, the beloved local reindeer that died earlier this month. Police spokesman Christopher Barraza says the blurry image was taken on February 20th by a photographer who only recently submitted it. He hopes it helps people recognize the suspect, a younger white male wearing a hoodie, a mask, and very clean white shoes.
Maybe somebody recognized the stature, or like if they've been bragging maybe that they try to help Star.
The photo was taken around the time the suspect is thought to have taken Star out of its enclosure. Barraza says the witness reported seeing the suspect rummaging in the back of a white SUV.
They took something out that looked similar to like something you'd break open an enclosure with. They left. They saw this person come back, rummage again, and then they had pulled out another thing that looked similar to maybe like a spray bottle and left again.
Star's owner, Albert Whitehead, says he confronted a man the following night who was spraying something first onto Star, then into Star's face. But he can't be sure it's the same man in the photo, which Whitehead just saw this morning.
They're very similar. Yeah, same dress and everything. Yes, they look similar, but I wasn't sure they're the same.
Star was the seventh local reindeer to bear the name. Whitehead says any plans for a new one are on hold until the suspect is behind bars.
Apparently, we do not feel safe about putting another animal out there.
Soon after the spraying, Star contracted pneumonia. The reindeer was euthanized April 1st. You can find the image police released this week in the online version of this story at alaskapublic.org. Police are asking anyone with information about the suspect to call 311. Tensions over a levee that's taking shape in backyards along Juneau's Mendenhall River have come to a head. One homeowner filed suit against the city seeking to exempt his property or be paid for it. Win or lose, officials say the levee will go up. As KTUO's Alex Solomon reports, that could increase the cost to the city.
Stephen Bauer filed suit against the city last week, alleging that officials did not go through the right process for approving the levee intended to keep floodwaters out of Mendenhall Valley homes. The court filing asserts that the barriers will not benefit Bauer's property. His home was not damaged during the 2023 or 2024 glacial outburst floods. Scott Perkins, Bauer's attorney, says,
he doesn't want to pay for this barrier. He doesn't want this barrier on his property. And in the alternative, if the barrier has to be put on the property, he deserves to be compensated for the amount of land that he has lost.
The lawsuit takes issue with an ordinance the city created. It's called a Local Improvement District, or LID, so it could spread 40% of the barrier construction cost among hundreds of landowners poised to benefit. Landowners had the opportunity to vote down the LID in February, but only a quarter formally objected. Both the U.S. Constitution and the Alaska Constitution forbid the government from taking private land for public use without paying them for it. And taking is the key word here. Emily Wright, the city's attorney, says the city isn't taking the land, since Bauer will still own the part of his property with the levee on it, which is meant to be temporary. But she says if a judge rules that the land is being taken, the city would have to pay all of the landowners hosting the barriers. It's called eminent domain.
Which requires just compensation, because if we're not on people's property because of the LID, we have to have permission to be on their property somehow.
If a judge rules against the city's process, it wouldn't be able to charge any landowners for the project. City Manager Katie Kester says the assembly would have to decide whether and how to cover an estimated $3 million.
We're still actively pursuing, you know, grants, working with Clinkett and Haida on CDBG, Community Development Block Grant funding. And so, you know, we will continue to aggressively pursue those funding sources.
The court filing also alleges that the city didn't get the right permits to do the project. Perkins says that would have required an environmental assessment. Nate Rumsey, a city engineer, says the city didn't have to do that because the last flood prompted an emergency declaration. So the city got what's called a nationwide permit through the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Rumsey says he anticipated a lawsuit like this, and if Bauer wins, the levee would still be built with some alterations.
We have alternatives from an engineering perspective available that could allow it to still provide protection to the rest of the community.
The city has to respond to the filing by the end of the month, and Perkins says a handful of other homeowners may soon join it. A court date has not yet been set. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
If Anchorage's closest active volcano blows, up to a quarter inch of ash from Mount Spur could cover the city and its many cars and trucks. So what can you do to protect your vehicle? Alaska Public Media's Hannah Floor asked a mechanic for advice.
James Trueblood holds up a pair of black, queen-sized pantyhose.
Let's give it a shot.
The rumor is they'll protect a car's engine from volcanic ash, a sort of pre-filter before the car's air filter. Trueblood owns JT Auto in South Anchorage. He says, I'm not the first person who's asked him about it, but it is the first installation he's done.
Where does it go? What ostensibly is it supposed to do? Is there a certain kind of pantyhose that is actually better?
Well, I've never done any studies to determine pantyhose, whether it's the black ones or the nude ones.
If a lot of ash particles make it past the engine's air filter, it can mess with the way a car runs and eventually damage the engine. That can happen while ash is falling or later when it gets kicked up on the roads. Trueblood's not sure the pantyhose will do a whole lot, but he says they can't hurt. He pops the hood of my car and points to the long black snorkel thing, an air intake going from the front of the engine back to a black plastic box, the air filter cover. He says every car is different, but they all have that intake somewhere, and it'll lead you to the filter. He detaches the cover and pulls the filter out, then slides on the torso of the pantyhose. Then he folds the waistband over at the end to create a seal and tucks the legs along the back of the filter. He says it's important to secure any excess fabric.
Because we don't want the legs flapping around inside the engine.
Pantyhose on, Trueblood pops the plastic filter cover back in place. But then he takes it back off and slides off the pantyhose. He says they can't hold up long term to the continuous vacuum of the air filter.
Pantyhose just weren't meant for it for the long haul.
If you decide to use pantyhose, you should wait until Mount Spur erupts. If they deteriorate inside the engine, that's a whole new set of problems. But Trueblood says he's not planning to get himself a pair. Instead, he's just going to keep a few spare air filters on hand.
I think the regular air filter is going to do the job.
If there's ash falling or a thick blanket on the ground and you have to drive, Trueblood says pantyhose can help. But you can also just check your air filter afterward. He says knock it against your tire. If a lot of ash falls off, swap it out for a new one. And if you're driving through ashfall, whatever you do, don't turn your wipers on. The ash is made up of bits of minerals and rock, which can scratch windshields. If you need your wipers to see, Trueblood recommends continuously spraying wiper fluid while they're on. If you run out, he says water is better than nothing. And he says those tiny particles are bad for the paint on a car, too.
Try not to brush the ash off of your paint with a snow brush, because that's the one thing we all have easily available. And that is not going to do us any good on the paint and the appearance of our car.
He says it's better to clean the car with a hose. And if you have a paint job you really care about, put the car in the garage with a cover on it and wait until it's all over. He says if there's a whole lot of ash on the ground, that's good advice in general.
Maybe our best choice is to stay at home, stay inside, and not drive through it.
Otherwise, he says, just pay a little extra attention to your car and it'll likely be fine. In Anchorage, I'm Hannah Floor.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
ConocoPhillips Alaska, building the next generation of Alaska's workforce through investments in education and vocational training. ConocoPhillips Alaska, committed to Alaska for more than 50 years,
Construction season is here, Alaska. Go to dot.alaska.gov/construction to learn about road, airport, and facilities projects across the state. You can zoom in on projects in your community using the interactive map, view traffic impacts, download data, and look at construction photos that will update all season long. Visit dot.alaska.gov/construction to learn more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
Alaskans could soon have access to a new type of charitable gambling. The Alaska Beacon reports that the Alaska House of Representatives voted 35-2 on Friday to allow snow classics. That's what they're calling a type of gambling game that involves guessing the amount of snow on the ground at a certain spot and a certain date and time. Snow classics are currently limited to a guessing game at Mount Alyeska held to benefit Four Valleys Community School. But if the Senate passes House Bill 50 and Governor Mike Dunleavy allows it to become law, organizations across the state would be allowed to hold them. HB 50 was sponsored by Juneau Democratic Representative Sarah Hannon, who introduced it on behalf of the Juneau Nordic Ski Club. The Tax Division of the Alaska Department of Revenue said it believes the bill could be implemented without any impact on the state budget. Contractors dismantling Fort Greeley's old nuclear power plant have begun shipping scrap material from the project to a radioactive waste storage site in Texas. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Army Corps of Engineers contractors last month began moving the tons of scrap material they've generated since the demolition work began in October.
We've shipped 137 tons of low-level radioactive waste, and we began those shipments on the 28th of March, and those shipments will continue throughout the summer.
Project manager Brenda Barber says much of the material is classified as low-level radioactive waste, but some is contaminated with non-nuclear hazardous substances that builders often used back in the 1950s when the power plant was built.
So there's traditional environmental contaminants, PCBs in the paint, lead in the paint, asbestos, all the traditional environmental hazards here.
The hazardous material includes debris from a small Quonset hut that was on the site, along with insulation and siding that's been removed from the main structure's steel frame. Barber said last week that contractors paused hauling the stuff away until they could get more of the big intermodal shipping containers they use to transport the material.
We'll resume shipping on the week of the 21st of April.
The containers are about the size of a conventional roll-off dumpster, but more heavily built. Barber says after they're filled, they're taken to a waste storage facility on post about a mile north of the demolition site until they're ready to be loaded onto trucks operated by Linden Transport.
When we're ready to ship, the Linden trucks arrive here. We load them onto tandem trucks. We properly secure them. We do another round of radiological surveys, and they are properly shipped off-site for their long journey down to waste control specialists.
Trucks pulling two flatbeds, each loaded with a container, take them to the Alaska Railroad Yard in Fairbanks, where they're transferred onto rail cars and taken to the port in Whittier. Then they're barged to Seattle, loaded onto rail cars, and taken to a facility in Texas that can safely store the waste. Barber says the containers are built to protect the public from being exposed to radiation.
They are properly sealed, and we do a wide variety of radiological surveys to make sure that there's no dust or contaminant on the outside of the container. In addition to that, we place absorbents, and in some cases, we line the container to make sure that there's no possibility for contaminants or dust to leak from the container.
Meanwhile, Louisiana-based contractor Aptum Amentum Alaska Decommissioning and its subcontractors will place a heavy plastic liner over the frame of a temporary enclosure at the waste storage site. She said work will begin later in the year on another enclosure over the old power plant building itself that'll enable demolition work to continue through the winter.
The liner will go on and the rest of the structural pieces will be put together in the September-October timeframe.
Barber says despite a couple of delays, the Corps of Engineers hopes to complete the $95 million project on time by August 2029. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
Willie Hensley is a well-known Alaska Native leader, and a documentary that premiered last week in Anchorage gives you a chance to get to know what makes him tick. KNBA's Rhonda McBride has this preview.
Willie Hensley has worn a lot of hats in his life, and you can see a lot of them in Marla Williams' film, as well as something else.
That was really fun in this film, to look at how many different hairstyles Willie has had throughout his life. He's gone from a flat top and a nerdy little side part to long 60s sideburns, and now to a ponytail all the way down his back.
The film gives you a taste of Hensley's personal charm and traditional Inupiaq humor as it follows his rise as a champion for the Native land rights movement and transformation into a statewide leader.
I think he's a man of his times. He's always current. He's always looking forward, but he's not stuck in his past. He uses his past to keep him moving forward.
The film also takes you to a religious boarding school in Tennessee, where Hensley arrived as a teenager with only a shopping bag full of belongings. His classmates didn't quite know what to make of the care packages of whale meat and other subsistence foods he received, but were happy to have him on their football team because he was one of the fastest on the field.
In those days, if you were a young Inupiaq that age, if you survived TB and chicken pox and influenza and everything else that everybody caught, you were pretty damn tough.
The documentary's next showing will be in Hensley's hometown of Kotzebue on April 17th and can later be seen online. It is the 10th installment of the Magnetic North, the Alaska Character series, which has profiled political figures like Governor Bill Sheffield and Native leaders like Jacob Adams and carver Nathan Jackson. The series was made possible by the Alaska Humanities Forum and the Rasmussen Foundation. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
Well, it's official. A Ketchikan woman now holds the Guinness World Record for largest female mouth gape. That's how wide you can open your mouth vertically. Guinness World Records announced Marie Pearl Zelmer Robinson as the new record holder in a video last week. The video opens with Robinson holding a very large cheeseburger.
Triple cheeseburger. Sextuple cheeseburger. Octuple cheeseburger. Deca burger.
Robinson narrates as she fits 10 burger patties and 2 buns between her teeth. A Ketchikan dentist measured her open jaw at over 3 inches wide. She shattered the previous record held by a Connecticut woman by more than half an inch.
Having a record for something is like making a fact for the whole world to learn from. And people look at that and they think, that's something that really exists. I wonder if I can do that.
Robinson said if anyone thinks they can beat her world-class jaw, she welcomes the challenge.
Cheeseburger.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin, Wesley Early, Chris Clint, Hannah Floor, and Rhonda McBride in Anchorage, Shelby Herbert in Fairbanks, Alex Solomon in Juneau, Tim Ellis in Delta Junction, and Jack Darrell in Ketchikan. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky's our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com. GCI, providing telecommunication services to tribal health organizations and nonprofit rural health providers, enabling telehealth services for Alaskans. More at gci.com/healthcare.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.
Running, 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 running. Sometimes you bend, sometimes you stand, sometimes you turn your back to the wind. There's a world outside the darkened door where blues won't haunt you anymore. With a brave, I'll free lover's soul, come ride with me to the distant shore. We won't hesitate, break down the guarded gate. There's not much time left today. Life is a highway, I won't ride it all night long. If you're going my way, I won't drive it all night long. Through all these cities and all these towns, it's in my blood and it's all around. I loved you now like I loved you then. This is the road and these are the hills. From Mozambique to those Memphis nights,
save you. watch it all go by. Was it really true? Is that what it was? Was that really you? Looking back again, tracing back the thread. Said it was a mess. Swing the bat. Too many years of dying. Why is that? And so help me decide. Faith in me.
Anyway.
My son could have been a doctor or a lawyer, rich and true. Instead, he burned up like a piggy on a barbecue.
Should we blame the matches?
Should we blame the fire?
Or the doctors who allowed it to expire?
Heck no!
Blame Canada! Blame Canada!
With all the hockey hullabaloo and that bitch on Murray, too.
Blame Canada! Shame on Canada!
Now maybe I did not mean to treat you bad, yeah, but I did it anyway. Now maybe some would say your life was sad, yeah, but you lived it anyway. And so maybe your friends that stand around you watch you crumble as you fall down to the ground.